Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to Mystic Truth Radio. We're really happy to be back. And I am Elaine Reed Cole, the Winged Mystic. And today, happy, happy, happy is the word that we are going with, because I am here with health and happiness specialist, Debbie Lynn Toomey. So welcome, Debbie. I'm so happy to have you here today.
Oh, thank you so much, Elaine. I'm very excited to be here today and share with you some tips and skills that could be used in the midst of people's busy day. So thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited.
Absolutely. Well, you know, this topic is something that is near and dear to my heart because, honestly, I myself like to spread the seeds of happiness and optimism and all that. And, you know, the way that society is, we have a tendency to look at things that are really dramatic and, you know, downtrodden, and, you know, that's what makes the news and all that. And, you know, then somebody like yourself comes along who, you know, you have dedicated your life to bringing happiness about. And, you know, I know Debbie some. I've met her before in the past and stuff. And she is not an airy-fairy kind of a person, but she is a joyful person. And so, you know, because, yeah, she's not out there sprinkling stardust everywhere, although, you know, if she had it, she probably would.
I would love to do that, yes.
Yeah, but, you know, happiness is just something that you would explain to me, you're just kind of hardwired for that.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe to dive in a little bit about, like, your background with it and, you know, really kind of what makes somebody be happy. What's the secret?
Wow. Okay, that's a lot there. All right.
Yeah, it is.
Thank you. And here we go. Fasten your seatbelts. I've always valued, ever since I was a little girl, I've always valued feeling good or happiness, harmony.
Mm-hmm.
There was something within me that always had to fix things or make things feel better or try to find something that can give to somebody so that way they could come away feeling that much more happy or appreciated. So as a little girl, I didn't know what kind of a profession that would turn into. I just knew that I wanted to do it. And it was one of my core strengths. So that translated into me becoming a nurse. I've been a nurse for over 25 years at Tufts Medical Center. And I've been able to use that aspect of myself in a technical way. I say technical because I'm always, as a nurse, we're using our hand, we're using our intellect, and we're always teaching, but it's almost like a technical job in a way, and a lot of giving TLC to our patients and teaching. But there, I felt like there's something more that I could give and do for people, because what I'm seeing is our people coming in with stress-related ailments that could have been prevented if they had known certain ways to navigate through their life journey, skills that they could use at work if they feel like they're not being appreciated, or at work if they're feeling stuck in their job and have that golden handcuff, as some people would say, or skills where if you're a mother or a parent, you feel like you're just, you know, so overwhelmed with your own schedule and your kid's schedule. And even if you have aging parents, their schedule, that heavy sandwich feeling. So I wanted to learn more about how I could empower people in an easy way without having them have to buy a lot of infomercial-like materials or gadgets to help them feel better. Like, it's almost going to be, you know, I don't want them to be buying little Band-Aids to cover up their deep-seated wounds that they could be taking care of themselves. So, you know, I went through a journey of learning about alternative complementary medicine practices techniques. It ranges from Reiki, energy healing. Again, I was so passionate. I knew there were other ways that people could heal. So I went into vibrational energy like homeopathy, energetics, or even acupressure shiatsu, or Western herbs, learning about herbs, how we could use nature to help us heal, or even learning about shamanism, how we could use nature spirits to help us heal.
Right.
Even learning about our intuition so that we trust our intuition, not other people's voices or people's story, but listening to our inner voice, our inner physician, to help us feel more whole and help us make the best decision. And
right.
all these different things. And eventually it's led through a wonderful path of me getting all these certifications and training. I've learned, but as I learned, I also got healing, because all these different modalities, as I would learn them, I would practice on myself or, you know, another colleague or a classmate, and there's healing that happens. And there's more of an aha, an aha, an aha. Oh my gosh, this is great. One modality led to another. And the most recent one that it's not really a modality, it's actually a science, positive psychology, the science of happiness and optimal peak performance, of learning how to flourish. And that's when I was able to give substance to the, what some people might say, woo-woo stuff of healing or feeling better. And positive psychology has different researches, thousands and thousands of research that supports why deep breathing is so important and integral in our life, why movement is so important when we're feeling depressed, why doing acts of kindness can actually lift somebody's spirits and make not only one person feel better, the one who's receiving the act, but also the person giving, and also the person witnessing the act. So all these different things that would normally, when we were growing up, would, you know, people might say, oh, these are like common sense nice deeds, or these are common sense stuff. But the field of positive psychology has given substance and also data that supports that all these different things that may seem like common sense are actually scientifically proven to really help people feel so much better and sustain a level of success, health, well-being, joy, resilience, optimism, self-compassion, so much more.
Right.
So as you can tell, I can keep going and going. So,
but I think it's great that you keep going and going. You know, of course, my mind, you know, it's moving right along with you, as I'm sure as our listeners and all that. But the one thing that I would like to point out is that people hear what you're saying, but they will not experience it unless they do what
right.
you're saying.
Yes, exactly, exactly. That's actually very true. And it could depend on the way people learn as well. And it could depend on how it's delivered. And that's why I appreciate the fact that I'm a nurse. Because when I speak about happiness and health, I speak from the lens of health, really like as a healthcare professional, because I've seen it. I've been immersed in it, and I've taken care of people who suffered from it. So I can give them case studies. I can give them stories. I can give them ways that people can actually help prevent certain things. Or even if it's not preventable, it could be a ways for them to get more resilience. I mean, my mother is a 3-time cancer survivor. I have seen her use techniques from the positive psychology innately, because it's just her strength. She's used gratitude. She's used movement and exercise to help her become more resilient and thrive and move and push through her cancer treatments, her surgeries, and so much more. You know, so it's not just something that, again, it's not a Band-Aid. You know, any type of
right.
positive habits, anytime, you know, you want to change something for towards a different way, it could be good or bad. It doesn't just happen overnight. So it's a commitment. It's a promise to yourself. So the health and happiness tips and skills that I teach in my programs or I speak about in my when I speak to different groups, corporate groups or, you know, students, teachers, guidance counselors, support centers, elderly groups, it's just there. I share what's pertinent to them, what they could use in their life, something that's relatable, something that's easy, something that can be added on to a typical routine that they have. So that way it can eventually make its way into that routine. So
okay, so it's not one shoe fits all. This is definitely you cater the approach depending upon
yes.
who it is that you're speaking
yes.
to. So to
right.
turn around and tell everybody, you know, well, if you paint the color of your walls yellow, you'll just be happier. You know, like a blanket statement like that doesn't always work. So there's many
right.
different approaches, right?
There are many different approaches. Just, you know, I'm very big into affirmations, positive
mm-hmm.
affirmations. I have benefited from positive affirmations, but other people might say that doesn't work. Well, that's fine. But what you could do is that could be just an aspect of what you could use to as a reminder to
right.
help you towards achieving your goal. So positive psychologists would say that this is a reminder, or they might say it's a primer. You're priming yourself towards reaching your best positive self goal.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
putting images, quotes, people, listening to songs, wearing your favorite colors, these all are in alignment to whatever goal you're trying to do. So, you know, painting our walls yellow, sure, that'll help. It'll help bring up, you know, it'll make it feel like it's a sunny day. It might be very helpful for people. But, you know, for some people, it may not be. It might be a reminder of something tragic in their life, so it may not work. So
right.
using different techniques, weaving it into whatever it is that they're trying to go for is a smart way of teaching people, empowering people to create their own tools. I have a mindfulness workshop right now called Inner Peace and Peak Performance, Mindfulness for Inner Peace and Peak Performance. And my goal is in that 4 weeks for people, the individuals who are in my workshop, for them to create their own mindfulness tools that's going to help them get into that peak of inner peace and also peak performance when they're at their desk at work and their boss is cramming down on them saying, oh, we got to go do this, I got to stay late, or, and that they're not feeling appreciated, they're feeling stressed, or for parents maybe who are, you know, hearing screaming kids all the time. So I'm teaching them different tools that they can then pick and choose. And then eventually have this beautiful array of tools, techniques that they could incorporate in their day. So that way they have something that they could own, something that they love, something that they will use as their mask. So that
mm-hmm.
way they feel nurtured and supported.
Perfect. Perfect.
Mm.
Now, question, because I hear all this and you have all those tools and, you know, it's awesome. What pushes Debbie's buttons?
What pushes my buttons?
Yeah.
Oh, good question. I love it. I love it. I love it. Okay, so what pushes my buttons? A lot. A lot. I love to say that because I'm being honest. Just because I'm a health and happiness specialist does not mean I'm shielded from life. Like I said, I have a mother who's a 3-time cancer survivor. You know, so that's enough to make anybody feel really, really sad and even depressed
mm-hmm.
as a caregiver, as a daughter.
Right.
What pushes my buttons are people who could be inconsiderate. What pushes my buttons? I know that when I'm hungry, things tend to push my buttons more easily than when I'm not hungry or when I'm tired. So health and happiness, whatever it is I'm doing, it's a practice. It's a dedication. It's a way of life. I'm only human, and in this space of being humanist, I give myself permission to be human. I give myself permission to be human. I give myself permission to be happy, because there are times when I've worked in places where happiness was not allowed because it was considered ignorant of the stress that's going on in the workplace. And I had to really tone down my level of happiness in that area, which was very much of an eye-opener. I don't know if anybody could relate to that, but certainly that's one of the things that I know as somebody who is just naturally a happy person. So a lot of things pushes my buttons, but as a health and happiness specialist and somebody who practices mindfulness and teaches mindfulness, it's all in how we pull ourselves back to the state of equanimity and allowing things to happen, because we have no control over it, allowing emotions to happen, noticing it, and just letting it go.
Perfectly stated. I think that this is so important for people to hear, because they think, you know, oh, you know, she's a specialist. So she is always a ray of sunshine. And honestly, everybody at different times will have to work at it, whether they're hardwired to be happy or not. So I'm really very happy that you decided to share the truth with everybody, because, you know, everybody is going to have a cloudy day every now and then.
Exactly. And we need, even though we don't like it at the time, we need those cloudy days. We need those cloudy days to help us look within, and we need those cloudy days to help us appreciate the sunshine. Because if it's always sunshine, you don't appreciate the sunshine. You take it for granted. It's only when things are taken away that we start appreciating it. And that's why it's so important, so, so important to appreciate, at least acknowledge the dark and the light.
So if you have grief, acknowledge it. If you have pain, acknowledge it. And then, you know, you work your way through it.
Exactly. The key is not to attach to it like Velcro. There's a phenomenon called Velcro and Teflon. And we do have a tendency to be Velcro, because it's in our human nature to attach to the negatives.
Right.
It's just the way it is. That's how we're hardwired. In order for us to survive as a species, as an animal, a mammal, we have this thing within us that's always in that protective mode. And in that protective mode, sure, it's, you know, it may not be a saber-toothed tiger that's attacking us, or a lion that's attacking us, or, you know, this dragon, but our mind doesn't know that. Our mind, the amygdala, that part of our brain, just says, oh, there's a threat. You're going to get hurt physically, or maybe mentally or emotionally. You don't know.
Right.
And so it does its job to protect us, maybe by helping us procrastinate, or maybe by helping us suppress emotion, maybe by helping us get distracted and allowing us to distract ourselves so that we don't get hurt.
Right.
But the more we know, the more we're more mindful and in tune with those diversional activities that we tend to do, the more we can take more healthy choices, mindful choices.
Which is so important, because that area that you're talking about, you know, that high stress level area, you know, rising cortisol levels and, you know, the whole bit, we are in a society now where we have a tendency to not recognize stress, because we're so used to it. So if people can just take a few minutes, even just a moment, to have a nice deep breath, relax for a second and actually get your body physically accustomed to this is how it feels if I'm not stressed. Because it may not remember. It doesn't know. Do you know how to relax? I know an awful lot of people out there, you know, and I generally don't hang around with them very much, but people who just cannot relax. So what about the youth nowadays who, you know, we have put labels upon them saying that they're hyperactive or ADD or ADHD and all that. You do work with children also. So, you know, what's one of the avenues that you take to actually bring them to a place where they start to actually be able to be in touch with themselves?
Yes, very good question. Yes, I do work with kids and from kindergarten all the way up to age 12. And the main practice that I teach them are from the field of mindfulness, because it's a way for them to get to know who they are. These kids that you say are labeled or diagnosed with certain diagnosis like ADHD, having Asperger's or ADD, depression. There's so many kids out there right now on medications for anxiety and depression. Yeah. And, you know, so, you know, as a nurse, I see this all the time. What has been very helpful, and I've seen from the kids, from them reporting back to me, from their parents telling me it's been helpful for them, are the different mindfulness techniques, helping them get to know who they are, even where they are. They could be in, you know, physically there, but are their minds really there because their right. minds are racing? Helping them appreciate, period, capital A, appreciate. Teaching them about appreciation and gratitude, because a lot of people say that a lot of kids these days are growing up ungrateful because we are so prone as a society to buy things to help them, to help us feel better because we're doing something for the kids, and also to help the kids just to be quiet so that way they'll stop nagging.
Right.
And society is always giving us all these new and improved this and that and this and that. Of course, we have to keep getting it and upgrades and whatever. So there's always that, okay, what's the next thing? What's the next thing I can get? So appreciation is so important. So, so important, because it's just, it helps with connection.
Right.
There's a mindfulness aspect in that. There's a communication aspect in that. There's a mind-body aspect in that. There's a connection with self and also something bigger and better than us. I'm talking about the science of gratitude. That's another science that I love, that I love to teach kids the practice of gratitude, because and adults as well. There's so many different gratitude practices out there that we could do so easily that can add more meaning into our life. Add 25% of happiness into our life, according to the scientists. But 25% is, hey, it's not 100%. But you know what? 25% might be enough that could make somebody who is depressed start practicing gratitude. It might be enough for them to connect with somebody that they trust so that they start feeling better. Or it might be enough for them, somebody who is so lonely and so afraid that they'll die alone. It might be enough for them to go to the next, I don't know, party. Something small that can yield such positive results. 25% is a lot, I believe.
Yeah. I've actually given people the homework of actually going out to public places for a day and just holding the door for people.
Mm-hmm.
Just
nice.
That's it. Just walk around all day. And when you mm-hmm. walk into a place, and if somebody else is in front of you or behind you, you hold the door for them.
Love it.
And just get that feeling of actually, it's a small act. It's something
mm-hmm.
that people should do instinctually, but they
mm-hmm.
may not. And, you know, the thank yous and all that, they add up. After a whole day of doing that and just being aware of people around you, you
mm-hmm.
know, you start to really appreciate, oh, and then you'll notice that more people start holding the door for you, too.
Exactly. Exactly. That's right.
Yeah.
I love that because they're doing something that is in service of others. So that's doing
right.
a kind deed. And then there's the aspect of, you talked about being people saying thank you. One of the
yep.
great things about doing something kind is to not expect anything back. Because
right.
it's when people, I know somebody or just kind of witnessed something and they held the door open for somebody. And then another person went through the door, and then another person went through the door, and eventually she's holding a door for, you know, what seemed like 30 seconds, but maybe it seemed longer to her. And then
uh-huh.
she walked away in a huff. She's like, oh, nobody said thank you. Okay. I was just
there you go.
Thinking to myself,
you know,
okay, well, you know, do it because
allow
you
the
do
disappointment,
it.
But you know what? Either way, you still did a good deed.
I know, but it's just when we add a level of expectancy in something, that's
you'll
when
get
we
disappointed.
Are, we could get
you could
disappointed. Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe not. But so, you know, a caveat when doing kind deeds, don't expect anything back. Just expect
that's right.
to keep doing it and expect that you're putting something in your karmic bank that you are a good person and somebody bigger and better is acknowledging that and you're making
excellent.
The world a better place. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Now, Debbie, you had mentioned you have three boys.
Yes.
You have three boys. Yes. So I did not have any boys myself. I, you know,
mm-hmm.
have raised a girl. Boys are so different. I've got nephews and stuff. They're, you know, like little puppies who all live together. So, you know, it can be trying on the soul and, you know, and rewarding for the soul in the same breath. So what kind of things are you actually teaching your boys to help them become, you know, like the best leaders and human beings of the human race?
Oh, love it. Love
deep.
It.
Deep. Yeah.
Yeah. Now you're talking.
Yep.
I am so blessed. I have three boys. The oldest is 22. He just finished college. He just finished, graduated psychology in Northwestern in Chicago. He's currently working in Boston. And my middle son, this is his first year in college. He's going for an engineering major in Worcester Polytech Institute. And then my youngest is 10. He's in grade 5 at Quincy Catholic Academy. And they are so precious. They are their own people. They love each other. They are good huggers.
Awesome.
And that's
big.
I am just, I cannot get enough of hugging and kissing. So we do a lot of hugging and kissing and they don't mind if it's in, you know, like hugging each other because we miss each other or hugging each other because we're about to go to work or hugging each other because we just got up in the morning. So it's just, it's a gesture. And my men, I call them men because they're young men. They are, I raise them, my husband and I, who is an amazing man himself, we raise our kids to be good to themselves, to the family, and to others. And
yeah.
I mean, they're different boys, and some will, you know, one will do it more than the other, but I need to appreciate them for who they are, because they're special in who they are. So they have certainly learned, in as a, you know, from me being their mother, some skills to help them feel
mm-hmm.
better.
Mm-hmm.
Some ways to help them not only positive psychology skills, but skills to help them when they're away at college and they're not feeling well. So, you know, they know to take their arsenicum and, you know, their arnica. If they have pain, they take their arnica, arsenicum, and all these different homeopathic remedies. You know, they have to take certain things because, you know, again, as a health and happiness specialist, I'm more than just a person teaching people skills. I'm also there to kind of help people kind of put together certain things that's, you know, more practical for them and different health aspects of feeling better, the physical aspect.
Now, do you ever find, because of your background, that you have inner conflicts between allopathic medicine and homeopathic medicine, because, you know, you do have a background in both. So,
yeah.
You know, is it every now and then difficult to pick and choose?
Well, yes or no. I mean, I can't, there's certainly a time to go to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it's an extreme, you know, it's if it's a trauma or, you know, cardiac event or any type of respiratory, you know, any acute event will require hospitalization. I can't, you know,
right.
I can't say that enough. But there's also things that we could do outside of that, you know, if you're not near a hospital, or if you feel you believe more in the natural way of healing, there is that homeopathic or herbal or magnets or acupuncture, all these different things, or chiropractic, you know, there are things that you could do to help you feel better, even dietary, right? So it was interesting yesterday. I was, because I still work part-time as a nurse at Tufts, which I love, you know, a patient asked me, so is it okay because I'm having surgery, having plastic surgery? I was told by a nurse that I could take arnica. Is that okay? And because I work in the anesthesia clinic right now, I said, well, you know, which nurse told you and what's your understanding of arnica? So they were given the right information about arnica, which is something that can help them heal, something that can help them lessen the pain, something that's going to help them decrease inflammation, something that's going to help support them during their healing.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, yeah, that's fine. That is fine. Because it's a remedy that has no chemical components. It only carries the energetic component of Arnica Montana, which is the actual flower that the homeopathic remedy, arnica, comes from.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So basically, it's the same as with anything. Educate yourself before you make a decision on anything, whether it be allopathic or homeopathic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do your research and ask around.
Mm-hmm.
Just ask. And people will give you the best information that they can. Generally, when I have a question, anything like that, I'll ask more than one person. What's your opinion?
Yeah.
What's your opinion?
Right.
And just gather opinions and work it out that way. Somewhere along the line, which I can be thankful for this, because I deal with a lot of nurses, you know, training them in Reiki and you know, other things too, that, you know, luckily we have an awful lot of broad-minded thinking out there, and they're really reaching out, like yourself, to incorporate as much that's natural. You know, great-grandma's remedy, there was a reason why it was around for so long.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to just do a bit of exploring with that, a lot of times you're just going to find that your body naturally reacts happier to something that is natural. It knows what to do with it. It understands it. You know, your body has its own innate intelligence in it. So that being said, because, you know, people do want to be happy. So what are some of the things that maybe people are using as a regular practice that might actually be hindering their happiness, stopping their happiness? You know, there are different things like, okay, well, it's not a thing that you're taking, but the news can hinder happiness. But what about something physical that people might be doing that they're not realizing? Well, that might be getting in the way of your mood.
Well, you mentioned before that, you mentioned that there are some people who did certain things, but you don't hang around them. So choosing who you hang around with, choosing the people that you engage with is one way to remove yourself from that kind of an energy that doesn't serve the kind of energy that you're going for, the positive energy. Yeah, so choosing your group. And also what's hindering, it could be something as simple as clutter, you know, physical space. If you see mess or clutter and you're punishing yourself because, I'm such a messy person and labeling yourself because of that, you see how it can spiral into something really negative. So decluttering and keeping a nice open space and even donating, that's the act of kindness, and, you know, being in that state of service, that's a nice exchange of physical energy as well. And then what you could do as well is, as far as physical things that we're doing for ourselves, could be the way we eat, what we're putting in our mouths. There's so many different delicious food out there, but some are just not as easily digestible as others. And you said that we're natural beings, we're human beings. I believe that as human beings, we are made to eat more natural food, which could mean vegetables. It could mean, you know, just being, you know, nuts and, you know, the beans, depending on your body's ability to digest will depend on, you know, the kind of choices you should make. But really becoming mindful of the food that we put in, even stopping, this is easy, you know, don't eat from a takeout bag or don't eat from a potato chip bag. That is okay. You asked before what pushes my buttons. That would be one of them because only because we were meant to eat from, we're meant to see our food. We're
That's
meant
right.
to see the portion of our food. We're meant to savor the colors, the textures of our food. Because if we eat from a bag, and honey, I've done it before. I'm a nurse. I've had long shifts where I had no time to go to the bathroom or even have lunch. Okay, so I've had my many years of eating from a bag. And when I do that, a part of me says, okay, good, I'm eating. But another part of me says, oh, my gosh, I get gorged down on that food and I didn't even taste it. So,
I'm going to pay for that. You know, it's one of those, oh God, I'm going to pay for that. Yeah.
Right. Not a good habit. So something as simple as that, putting it, you know, investing a couple of minutes or maybe a minute of your time, putting your cheeseburger on your plate. It may not be the healthiest food, but at least the cheeseburger is on the plate. You're seeing it, you're smelling it, you're experiencing it, and it might be enough for you to slow down, take a bite, and, you know, really taste the juice and the meat and the tomatoes, and, you know, make an experience out of it, you know. So our meals, very important, because what we take in, our food, influences the way we feel too.
That's right. That's right. So, yes, the food we eat is the energy that we give out. So, you know, that's really important for us to actually show that habit so that we can in turn show it to the children that are under our care. And that's important. Now, there's an area that I want you to talk about a little bit because I know that you work in this area too, but it's happiness yoga.
Oh, laughter yoga.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit.
Oh,
I think everybody should experience it at least once.
Oh yeah, definitely. I was just doing laughter yoga today in Dorchester. I do it for a group of elderly in the senior housing, and it is so much fun. Laughter yoga. It was created by Dr. Madan Kataria in 1995. And basically, he said, you know what, we can combine deep, hearty laughter with simple exercises, simple different movements, and add deep breathing, deep diaphragmatic breathing, and, and call it laughter yoga, basically is the gist of it. And it's caught on worldwide. And laughter yoga can be done anywhere. I've done it. One of the funniest places I've done it for is in a conference room at Beth Israel, and it was for a group of Harvard researchers. Imagine doing laughter yoga for a group of Harvard researchers. It was so much fun. Oh my God.
I can see it now.
Because before I did the laughter yoga, I felt like I had to give them some, like, they love research. I had to give them research, right, to substantiate why laughter yoga is so important. And we had such a blast. It was fun. They said, oh, we should do this all the time. And, you know, it was fun. But, yes.
Can you explain the process of it a little bit for people who might not, but like, you're not just standing there just, like, look at you and laugh. What are you doing? Explain it.
Yes and no. So what it is you. I'm a laughter yoga leader, and the leader basically would let the group know that there's different parts to it. There's the clapping. We clap our hands. When we clap, our body knows that there's something good that's going to happen. And plus, energetically, when we're clapping our hands, we're balancing our right and left brain, and also we're activating all these acupressure points. That's the very tip of our hands, at the very endings of our hands, right? And so we're clapping, and that engages the body that something good's going to happen. And then there's the chanting of ho, ho, ha, ha, ha. And it sounds funny, but these sounds actually purposely, when you do it from your belly, from your gut, it forces the oxygen down to your diaphragm. So it gives you that diaphragmatic breath. And the ha-ha-ha helps you empty out the stale air. So that way you're really getting good oxygenation. And what you do is, as a laughter yoga leader, you lead the class in different short segments of exercise. It's almost like follow the leader. One of the most interesting classes I've done it for are for groups of Chinese seniors in Boston, South Cove. Over the summer, I did a back-to-back 8-week workshops for different groups of Chinese seniors. I'm not Chinese. I'm Filipina. And for me to use laughter as a way to communicate was powerful. After a while, we didn't need an interpreter. The case manager who would normally like be there to interpret, to let them know we're going to do this now, and then they copy me, and then we do. We didn't need her anymore because it was follow the leader.
Oh, that's
after
awesome.
We finished, it was so wonderful. One of the oldest participants that I had was 96 years old. And she was so spry. Oh, my gosh, amazing. And the Chinese seniors are just so motivated to exercise. They're so motivated to move. And they were so open to laughter yoga. So I loved doing laughter yoga with them. It was great.
That is awesome. That really is awesome.
Yeah.
So laughter can truly give you longevity.
It does. And also I wanted to add, I've also done laughter yoga for the cancer support community in Norwell. So I do it there. And for cancer survivors, because they do laughter yoga, actually in a hospital in Chicago, they do laughter yoga for patients while the patients are receiving chemotherapy so that the patients will have, well, actually, laughter yoga, what it does is it lessens the pain because you release endorphins, and relaxes your muscles. It energizes you. It increases your immune system and relaxes your cardiovascular system and it makes you just feel good. So they do it for the cancer patients in a hospital in Chicago so that the patients themselves, when they're receiving the chemo, they're receiving it in a good feeling state. And what happens is with laughter, you can't contain it. So the caregivers also benefit. And also the care, the staff also, they benefit. So it's a wonderful way to bring exercise because it's an aerobic exercise. All right.
Yep.
Laughter yoga, 1 minute. 1 minute of deep, hearty laughter. This is according to William Fry, a specialist in laughter from Stanford University. 1 minute of deep, hearty laughter is equal to 10 minutes of jogging.
That's amazing. See, everybody should be out there doing this.
Right. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So when I let people know this, I have people who participate in my workshops who come in with walkers. They get wheeled in a wheelchair. People who have not exercised in a long time or aerobic exercise in a long time. And when I tell them this, it makes them feel so much better knowing that, oh, my gosh, I just had a good time and I just did an aerobic exercise. And
Excellent. People
feel away, they feel so much better the rest of the day because of the laughter yoga.
Yep. Yep. Now, do you also find on that idea of, you know, just laughing continuously and all that, is that when somebody is sick and say, you know, really one of their only activities is watching TV, but if they could turn around and just watch uplifting laughter, you know, just a happy kind of, not necessarily Hallmark Channel, but you know what I mean, Touched by an Angel kind of stuff, you know, it has a real impact on what they biologically are doing within their body to be able to fight it. Like you said, boosting the immune system from it. You know, they're breathing, they're, you know, so is it really such a good idea? Maybe, you know, if you're in such a state where you're trying to recoup from something and you're housebound for a while, you know, truly just find something that will inspire you and make you laugh.
That's a good question. Because one of the inspirations behind laughter yoga was Norman Cousins, who was diagnosed with a debilitating, painful disease called ankylosing spondylitis. It's a very painful, painful, painful disorder that any movement hurt. And he was diagnosed with this in the 1970s. And no medical doctors knew how to treat it. And so he said to his doctor, I want you to release me. I know what to do. What ended up doing was he checked into a hotel and he gave himself doses of vitamin C and he watched Groucho Marx movies. He watched movies that made him laugh because he thought, you know what, if laughing makes me feel good, how about lots of laughter? Maybe that can make me feel good. So he had people draw his blood before he did his, you know, vitamin C dose and also doing his laughter watching the movies with Groucho Marx, and then took it afterwards. And they noticed a big difference in his blood levels. And what he also noticed was when he sustained that level of feel good from deep, hearty laughter, it gave him such a good night's sleep, or even hours, good hours of sleep from doing or watching these funny shows. So laughter is so powerful. And that's why Norman Cousins wrote the book, The Anatomy of an Illness, because of that. And that's been a big eye-opener in the medical field about how powerful laughter is and how it's the best medicine.
Yep. Now, do you think that on that theory that people who are clinically depressed can actually find benefit from practices like this too?
Well, it depends on how severe their depressions are. But what I could tell you is laughter is very contagious. Even if somebody cannot or doesn't feel like laughing or participating in a laughter yoga session, even if they hear laughter, an aspect of them will feel an uplift, because it's that there's that certain connection within us that, you know, when somebody smiles, we just sometimes, you know, not sometimes, we usually just smile back, because it's
right.
just that recognition. Same
right.
thing with laughter, you know. So I mentioned this morning that I was doing laughter yoga in a low-income housing apartment complex. And, you know, it can be very, you know, sad there. And especially this time of the year when the residents are not able to get out because, you know, it's cold. Not so much this past week because we've been having gorgeous weather. But when it's cold and icy out there, they feel more isolated. So when we do laughter yoga, we purposely keep the door open so people can hear us, because it's an open door thing, people can walk in. But it's so amazing when people who even do not participate, they walk in, they take a look, and they see us having a good time and laughing. They smile, and they walk away smiling. They walk away hearing our laughter. And even today, the security guard, who would normally just pop in, you know, make a funny remark and then leave. And today he stayed towards the end of my laughter yoga class and even stayed for the meditation.
Wow.
It was amazing.
Yay!
I wasn't going for that, but it was just he heard the sound, the beautiful sound of laughter.
Yeah,
it lifts, it clears. It clears the vibes, the energy, the negative energy in the room. You know, it just clears the cobwebs in our head. It's just a great clearing, energetic powerhouse, I believe.
I think one of the things that can, you know, prove the point and stuff is that you will find that even animals are attracted to it. You know, instinctually, they hear human beings being happy, and they get curious. They want to come forward. You know, you know, of course, children totally attracted towards, you know,
what about
the kids that are put to bed and the grown-ups are downstairs having a good time and they start laughing? How many kids actually stay in bed and how many actually get out of bed so that they can sneak down the stairs and take a peek? You know, laughter does attract.
Yes, it does.
It pulls people in.
It does.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know I started out by saying that Debbie, you know, isn't the airy fairy spreading fairy dust, but I think after everybody listening to her, she really does, doesn't she? She really does. Let's throw the sparkles around. You know, and I think we need more of that out there. We just need more optimism, more hope, more... God, just more bright. And we have it within us. You know,
yes.
It doesn't have to be a dark world. We do have this capability, no matter, you know, what else is going on, no matter what world affairs are going on. We can
mm-hmm.
find these pockets of gratitude and happiness, you know. So
yeah.
I guess to remind people, look for it. You know, there's certain things that I always have around me that make me happy. Usually it's a good smell.
Mm-hmm.
I love crystals and prisms, and so I like
mm-hmm.
color and, you know,
mm-hmm.
Fractals and, you know, things like that. They just, they make me happy.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll have them around, you know, even if I'm being bombarded by political ads, you know, or something.
Mm-hmm.
Find good, happy things. Go open doors for people. You know,
mm-hmm.
We can.
I love that. I'll open the doors for people. I love that, Elaine. I love that.
Yay. Everybody, just go open doors for people.
Mm.
Welcome them in. Yeah. Step aside and let somebody go in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just helps. So, Deb,
yeah.
if people want to get a hold of you, or, you know, is there anything else that you actually want to top things off with before we close out for today?
Yeah, well, I'm finishing up a book, and it's on using positivity for productivity. So that's going to be released soon. They could visit my website. Yeah, my website is healthandhappinessspecialist.com. If you're a Facebook person, you can find me on Facebook. I have a Facebook page called what else but Health and Happiness Specialist. And
of course.
The page is, yeah, it's the page is called Positivity All the Time, where I post different images, different techniques, and just there's different postings there from people, which is great, and some video tips as well. But yeah, go to my website, and if you sign up to be on my added to my list, you can get a health and happiness assessment and another little bonus for yourself there too. So would love to have you.
Oh, that's excellent. That's excellent. Mm-hmm. What area are you around? Because of course we've got, you know, listeners
mm-hmm.
national. So, you know,
yes.
where are you located?
I'm located in Quincy, Massachusetts.
All righty.
Yes.
So anybody who is in the area who, you know,
mm-hmm.
wants to see Deb face-to-face, you know,
there's
ways to be able to get a hold of her.
Definitely. So, I speak for different organizations and also create programs for organizations on health and happiness, positivity,
mm-hmm.
and also I'm a positive psychology coach as well. So if you need a one-to-one coaching, That's my area of specialty as well.
There you go. So, this has been such a pleasure, Debbie. I really appreciate it. I think we've given, you know, some great tips out there to the public, and, you know, everybody, we can just be happy. You know, I have that song the whole time that we've been talking, that happy song running through my head, because I'm happy, happy. You know, it happens to be one of my favorite songs. So everybody sing it now. So thanks again. And for Mystic Truth
Radio.
Absolutely. And for Mystic Truth Radio, I am Elaine Reed Cole, and you can go to my website, www.thewingedmystic.com. You can also find me on Facebook under The Winged Mystic or under Mystic Truth Radio. And until next time, everybody, let's keep talking about it. All right. Bye now.
Thank you.
Bye.